Chapter 29, Krishna and the Gopis Meet. Today is text number 9. I do have a request of all of you as we approach this text number 9. The purport is 4 pages long, and so I was hoping that I could begin reading it and some of you could take the mic and read. We can share the joy of reading this purport of 4 pages. So if you have the mic ready and people are ready to do that, then maybe we can proceed in that way. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So word meanings of text number 9, anta griha, within their homes, gata, present, kaschit, some, gopya, gopis, alabda, not obtaining, vinirgama, any exit, krishnam, unto upon Sri Krishna, tat bhavana, with ecstatic love for him, yukta, fully endowed, tadyu, they meditated, milita, closed, dochana, their eyes. Antar viha gata kaschit, gopyo labdha vanir gama, krishnam tad bhavana yukta, tadyurmilitalochana, antaragriha gata kaschit, gopya labdha vinirgama, krishnam tadbhavana yukta, tadyurmilitalochana, antar griha gata kaschit, gopyo labdha vinirgama, krishnam tadbhavana yukta, dadyurmilita lochana.
Ladies.
Thank you. Translation. Some of the gopis, however, could not manage to get out of their houses, and instead they remained home with eyes closed, meditating upon him in pure love. Report by disciples of Srila Prabhupada, who we were fortunate to have Javeda among us last week or so. He didn't mention his name when he said disciples of Srila Prabhupada. He's mentioned Gopi Pranananapu and Hridayananda Maharaj, but he also was part of that team. And so we're fortunate to have his association. Throughout the 10th canto, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives elaborate poetic commentaries on Lord Krishna's pastimes. It is not always possible to include these extensive descriptions, but we will quote in its entirety his comments on this verse. It is our sincere recommendation to the learned Vaishnava community that a qualified devotee of the Lord present the entire commentary of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on the 10th canto as a separate book, which will undoubtedly be appreciated by devotees and non-devotees alike. So we have that done. His Holiness Bhanu Swami Maharaj has not only translated the 10th canto of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comments, but the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. So we're fortunate in that regard also, that we have these devotees living and serving amongst us. So the Acharya's comments on this verse are as follows. In this context, we will make our analysis according to the method described in Srila Rupa Goswami's Ujjvala Nilamani. There are two categories of gopis, the eternally perfect, the Nityasiddhas, and those who have become perfect by practicing bhakti yoga, the sadhana siddhas. The sadhana siddhas are of two categories, those who belong to special groups and those who do not. And there are also two classes of gopis belonging to special groups, namely the shrutichaaris, who come from the group of the personified Vedas, and the rishicharis, who come from the group of sages who saw Lord Ramachandra in the Dandakaranya forest. This same fourfold category of gopis is given in the Padma Purana, Gopyastu Shutayo Geya Rishika Gopakanyaka Devakanya Charajendra Namunusha Katochana. It is understood that some of the gopis are personified Vedic literature, while others are reborn sages, daughters of cowherds, or demigod maidens, but by no means, my dear king, are any of them ordinary human beings. Here we are informed that although the gopis appeared to be human cowherd girls, they actually were not. Thus, the contention that they are mortals is refuted. Someone want to pick up reading from there? Read a couple per paragraphs and we can go on. Yeah.
The daughters of cowards, referred to here as gopakanyas, must be eternally perfect since we have never heard of them having executed any sadhana. Their apparent sadhana of worshipping goddess Kachayani in the role of gopis merely manifests their manner of playing like human beings. And the Bhagavatam narrates the account of this worship only to show how they had fully taken on the role of coward girls. That the Gopakanya gopis are actually Nityasiddhas, eternally perfect devotees of the Lord, is established by a statement in the Brahma Samhita 537, Ananda Chinmaya Rasa Pratibhavitabhi, which proves that they are the Lord's spiritual pleasure potency. Similarly, we have the words of the Gotamiya Tantra, Hladini Ya Mahashakti. Further corroboration of their eternal perfection is that these gopis, being co-eternal with Lord Krishna, their lover, are mentioned along with him in the 18-syllable mantra, the 10-syllable mantra, and others, and also that the worship of these mantras, and also the shrutis that present them, have been in existence since beginningless time. The Devakanyas, daughters of the demigods, who are mentioned as first beginning Sambhavastvamara Striya, are explained in Sri Ujjvala Nilimani as partial expansions of the gopis who are eternally perfect. That the Shrutichari gopis, the personified Vedas, are sadhana siddhi is understood from the following words quoted in the Brihad Vamana Purana. Kagarpakoti lavanye tvai driste mamamsana kamini bhavam asadya svara shudhanya samshaya gata tvaloka vasinya kama tatvena gopika bhajanti ramanam matva chikshi janamastata. Since we have seen your face, which possesses the beauty of millions of cupids, our minds have become lusty after you, like those of young girls, and we have forgotten all other allurements. We have developed the desire to act toward you, as do the gopis who dwell on your transcendental planet and who manifest the nature of Cupid by worshiping you with the idea that you are their paramour.
Somebody else want to hear? Trivia?
The Rishichari gopis are also sadhana siddha. As stated in Ujjvala Nilamani, Gopala Pakshaka Purvam Apraptabhishta Siddhaya. Previously, they were all Maharishis living in the Dandaka forest. We find evidence for this in the Padma Purana Uttarakhanda.
Rishvaraman
Raman Harinatatra Te Sarge Sirishvam Arin Sampatya Kamina Tato Mukta Bhavanava. This verse says that upon seeing Lord Ramachandra, the sages in the Dandaka forest desire to enjoy Lord Hari, Krishna. In other words, the sight of Lord Rama's beauty reminded them of Lord Hari, Gopala, their personal object of worship, and they then wanted to enjoy with him. But out of embarrassment, they did not act on that desire. Whereupon Lord Sri Ramachandra, who is like a desire tree, gave his mercy to them, even though they had not voiced their request. Thus, their desire was fulfilled, as stated by the words beginning Te Sarva. By means of their lusty attraction, they became freed from the ocean of material existence, the cycle of birth and death, and coincidentally, they got the association of Hari in conjugal love.
In the present verse of the Bhagavatam, we understand that it was the gopis who had children who were kept forcibly at home. This fact is clear from verses yet to come, Ma Tarapi Tarapu Tra 10:29-20. Yat Patya Patya Suridam Anurvati Ranga and Patisu Tandaja Bhatri Bandavan 10:31-16. In his comments on the 10th canto, Srila Kavikarnapur Goswami mentions this fact. Without trying to repeat all his thoughts on this verse, we will give the gist of his purport. Upon seeing the personal form of Lord Sri Ramchandra, the sages who are worshippers of Lord Gopala immediately became elevated to the mature platform of spontaneous devotion, automatically reaching the stages of firm faith, attraction, and attachment. But they had not yet completely freed themselves of all material contamination. Therefore, Sri Yogamaya Devi arranged for them to take birth from the wombs of gopis and become cowgirls. By associating with the eternally perfect gopis, some of these new gopis fully manifest purva raga, loving attraction for Krishna, as soon as they reach puberty. This kind of attraction develops even before one meets the beloved. When these new gopis got the direct audience of Krishna and physically associated with him, all their remaining contamination became burned up, and they achieved the advanced stages of prema, sneha, and so on.
Even though they're in the company of their current husbands, by the power of yoga maya, the gopis remain unsullied by sexual contact with them. Rather, They were situated in purely spiritual bodies that Krishna enjoyed. On the night they heard the sound of Krishna's flute, their husbands tried to stop them, but by the merciful assistance of Yogamaya, the sadhana siddha gopis were able to go forth to their beloved, together with the nitya siddha gopis. Other gopis, however, because of not getting the good fortune of associating with the nitya siddha gopis and other advanced gopis, had not achieved the stage of prema, and so their contamination was not completely burned away. They entered the company of their coward husbands, and, after sexual union with them, gave birth to children. But a short time later, even these gopis developed their pururag by hankering intensely for the physical association of Krishna, a hankering they acquired by associating with the advanced gopis, becoming worthy recipients of the mercy of the perfect gopis. They assumed transcendental bodies fit to be enjoyed by Krishna. And when Yogamaya failed to help them overcome their husband's attempts to keep them from going out, they felt themselves cast into the worst calamity.
Viewing their husbands, brothers, fathers, and other family members as enemies, they came close to dying, just as other women might remember their mothers and other relatives. At the time of death, these gopis remembered the sole friend of their buried life, Krishna, as stated in the present verse of the Bhagavatam, beginning with the word antar. It is implied that those ladies were not able to exit because they were held back by the husbands who were standing before them with sticks in their hands, scolding them. Although these gopis were perpetually absorbed in love for Krishna, at that particular time they meditated upon him and cried out within, "Alas, alas, oh my friend, ocean of the artistic skills of Vrindavan Forest, please let us become your girlfriends in some future life, because at this time we cannot see your lotus-like face with our eyes. So be it. We shall look upon you with our minds." Each of them lamenting to herself in this way, the gopis stood with their eyes shut and meditated deeply upon him.
Thank you all very much. Om Jnana Timarandasya Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmaha Shri Gurave Namaha. So today, as we are still at the very beginning of this pinnacle of instruction in Srimad Bhagavatam, the 10th canto, I thought that I would focus on some perspective issues. I think the verse and the purport lend itself to that in one way, discussing to a discussion of who assembled there for the Rasa dance and what implications that had. So I'd like to talk about that, give some perspective on that. And then our own assembly. I mean, that's one assembly. We also are in our own assembly here. So I thought that some perspective on why we are here and what we hope to achieve by being here in the Bhagavatam class, some perspective on what that may mean for us. So first, our own assembly. As I said, we're in studying these four chapters, 29 through 33. We are at the pinnacle of instruction in Srimad Bhagavatam in terms of the most confidential knowledge that the Bhagavatam is imparting to us. So that's that knowledge, that subject matter to be known, technically it's called prameya, or what is to be known. And so our attempts here are to know the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam. And to know the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam, or any Vedic literatures, generally we go back to the very first verse of those Vedic literatures to get some understanding of what the author's intent was. So if we go back to Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.1, we find Srila Vyasadeva's purpose in putting forth the Srimad Bhagavatam. There he describes Lord Sri Krishna, that he's the absolute truth, the primeval cause of all causes, of creation, sustenance, and destruction of the manifest universes, and who is free from, forever free from illusion, the illusory representations of this material world. In the second verse, we also find that the purpose, the author's purpose, is to present the difference between knowledge and illusion for the benefit of all. And so with these objectives in mind, Srila Vyasadeva has compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam. So that's the subject matter to be known. That's the subject matter to be known, Prameya. But what is the best way to obtain that objective? Of course, the author has given Srimad Bhagavatam as the pramana, or the best way to get valid knowledge. We're trying to get knowledge of Sri Krishna, knowledge that will be beneficial to us in achieving our goal of life. And the pramana, the method by which we get that valid knowledge, is the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, of course, it's not just me that's saying this, but it's something that's important that has to be said. And it has been said, particularly by our acharyas, beginning with Jiva Goswami particularly, that Srimad Bhagavatam is the pramana, or the method by which we can actually get this most confidential knowledge and achieve our goal in life. We know that the Goswamis were charged by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nana Shastra Vichara Naika Nipano, Sat Dharma Samstapakako. Prior to the advent of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this prameya, or knowledge that we want to get, that Krishna is the goal of life, wasn't clear. Neither was the way to achieve that goal in life very clear. But the contribution of the Goswamis, particularly Jiva Goswamis, is that they made it clear that the goal of life is to reestablish our relationship with Krishna, to give Krishna pleasure by our service to him. And the proof of that is the Srimad Bhagavatam. Jiva Goswami has put this forth in his sandarbhas, particularly the Tattva Sandarbha, which we have recently published, Gopi Pranadana Prabhu's translation and commentary on Srila Jiva Goswami's Tattva Sandarbha. And the particular purpose of this sandarbha is to establish the pramana, the proof, the valid way of attaining knowledge, that the valid way of attaining knowledge, the knowledge of our original position and our nature as servants of Krishna, the way to prove that is the Srimad Bhagavatam. So that's why we're studying Srimad Bhagavatam. Because we've understood to one degree or another that the goal of life is to please Lord Sri Krishna, and that the way to do that is to perform devotional service, loving devotional service, for Krishna's satisfaction alone. That's prameya, pramana. But to do all that, to do everything we're doing sitting here today, there is some adhikar required. There's some qualification required on the part of each and every one of us to understand what is to be known, prameya, how to attain that knowledge, pramana. There is some adhikar or qualification required. Tom Harper, when he gave his class on Monday or a couple days ago, he was talking about how those of us, again, we're focusing on perspective on our own assembly right now, but he was talking about how those of us have our, how our lives and the participation in this temple have given us that adhikar, or at least put us on the road to attaining that adhikar. Because we've been sitting here, starting from first canto, now all the way to 10th canto, every day progressively, step by step by step, studying Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's the one adhikar that Srila Prabhupada emphasized over again and again, is that don't just jump to the 10th canto, but progressively study first 9 cantos. So that's what this assembly is for. That's what this assembly that takes place every day is for. It's for progressively studying, step by step, verse by verse, to come to these 4 chapters that contain the most confidential knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's what we're doing. That's what we're doing every day. We're qualifying ourselves by this type of study. But it's not just like ordinary study. It's not ordinary studying books like you might do at a university or something like that. It's actually qualifying yourself. When we study these books, Srimad Bhagavatam, and the books of the Goswamis, it's not like academic study. It's qualifying ourselves. It's getting out the adhikar. That's what it is. It's not just reading books. And proof of this is found in the words of Srila Narottam Das Thakur. It's interesting. You may know this bhajan that Narottam Das Thakur sings, Lala Samai Prarthana. There's one line, Rupa Raganata Pade Hoibe Akuti Kabihama Bujayo Se Jugala Priti. Now Prabhupada, he gives a very interesting translation of this. He says that, when shall I be very much eager to study the books left by the 6 Goswamis? That's his translation of that. But the verse says, if you give a literal translation, it says, when will I be anxious to take the feet of the Goswamis? Rupa Raganata Pada Hoyebe Akuti. Doesn't say anything about books. But what we can understand is that taking the feet of a guru, taking the feet of the Vaishnavas, means to humble yourself, to qualify yourself, to get the adhikari to attain their feet, to attain their service. And so when Prabhupada says that, when will I be anxious to study the books left by the 6 Goswamis, he's telling us that you can studying the books of the 6 Goswamis is what purifies you to be able to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Rupa and Raghunath, of the six Goswamis, of the saintly persons. So study of the literature left by the six Goswamis is not just like academic study. It's meant to qualify us so that we can take shelter of the lotus feet of the devotees, the Vaishnavas, and Krishna. Because this subject matter of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, particularly these four chapters, is not something that can be understood by academic endeavor. Academic endeavor will leave us simply confused about Krishna and his activities, especially his activities with the gopis. Materially contaminated intelligence can't understand the pure activities that are going on here. And I think we can all appreciate that just by thinking for a minute about, again, what is our endeavor here? If we're trying to understand the highest knowledge, the absolute truth, then why are we hearing about the activities of simple, uneducated people in a cowherd village? How is that giving us the highest in knowledge? How is Krishna's loving affairs with the gopis telling us what is the supreme absolute truth in this world? Especially activities which to the contaminated mind and heart appear to be just like lusty affairs between boys and girls in this material world. How is that the absolute truth? Shouldn't it be an equation or something? I mean, that's what Einstein and so many scientists say, or shouldn't the absolute truth be all-inclusive, without variety, like the impersonalists say? And so shouldn't these chapters, which represent the most confidential knowledge, be something which are more even philosophically orientated? We can't understand that these activities of these four chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam are the highest knowledge unless we understand them with our hearts, with our purified hearts, not our contaminated hearts, but with our purified hearts. But to speak of these chapters and the Srimad Bhagavatam altogether, we find stories in Srimad Bhagavatam. There's one story after another. Why stories? Why not deep philosophy? Of course, that's there also, but not so much. There's one pastime after another. This devotee interacting with the Lord in that way, these devotees interacting together. These things can be understood by the heart, how they represent, how they present the supreme absolute truth. So that requires samadhikari, that our hearts have to become pure. And when our hearts become pure, then we can understand how this is the science of the supreme absolute truth. And our hearts can become pure, as Narottam Das Thakur says, Rupa Raghunatha Pade Hoive Akuti, Kabe Hama Bhujayo Se Yugala Priti. When will I be anxious, very much eager to study the books left by the six Goswamis, to undergo that type of purification? That is what we are doing daily by sitting in the Bhagavatam class. So that's some perspective on what we are doing in this assembly. But what are the gopis and Krishna doing in their assembly? Some little bit of perspective on that can be found by a study of this word kaschit, which means some. This word some is repeated in throughout the, this kaschit is repeated throughout the verses talking about Krishna who called the gopis. Some of them responded in that way, some of them responded in other words. So this word kaschit is very important. It means some. And the importance of it is that it indicates variety. Krishna's pastimes are not monolithic in any sense of the term. They're full of variety. And we see, we read in the purport here today, so many different types of gopis assembled when Krishna called. So many different types. They came from different categories. It's interesting that not only are there these different kind of sadhana siddhi categories that are mentioned primarily in the purport today by Srila Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur, but also in the first verse of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Rupa Goswami, he describes there five different types of gopis that Krishna interacts with, and how he interacts with them differently. And Jiva Goswami, in his category, in his commentary on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, says that there are 10 types of gopis mentioned there. And the reason why it's important to understand that there's different classifications, both of sadhana siddha and nitya siddha, is because the difference means that there are different kind of relationships, and those different kind of relationships give rise to different kind of bliss. So when we see the rasa dance, we read about the rasa dance, Krishna is interacting with those billions of gopis that assembled there in varieties of ways. It's not monolithic. He's interacting in one way. He's interacting with each type of gopi in a different way. Let me just read for you something here that talks about that, based on the first verse of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar Devotion. Here's the translation. Let the Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, be glorified. By virtue of his expanding attractive features, he subjugated the gopis named Taraka and Pali and absorbed Shama and Lalita. He is the most attractive lover of Srimati Radharani and is the reservoir of pleasure for all devotional mellows. So again, this is the first verse of Rupa Goswami's work, and so there he's telling us what science he's going to be teaching us, and he's teaching us the science of how Krishna interacts with his devotees in different ways. There's a comment here. It says that Srila Rupa Goswami groups these five different gopis according to the intensity of their affection for Krishna. Taraka and Palika, Shama and Lalita, and Srimati Radharani. By his radiantly attractive feature, Krishna subjugates Taraka and Palika. That is, he controls them. He absorbs Shama and Lalita by taking them into his intimate circle. Srimati Radharani is the dearest to Krishna. He becomes her submissive lover. Such is the unparalleled rival of her devotion. So you can see by this that there are different, that's from Jiva Goswami's commentary on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. You can see how Krishna interacts differently with different devotees. And so not only is he enjoying supreme bliss in the company of all the devotees, but he has different relationships and enjoys different types of bliss with the different types of gopis that are there. And how he enjoys that is also variegated. It's not, again, monolithic in any way. It depends, as Jiva Goswami says, on the intensity of the loving relationship those devotees have with Krishna. So when he called them with their flute, different gopis responded in different ways, as is described in a verse today. And when they came or didn't come, Krishna enjoyed with them in different ways. And that all, the difference between the whole thing just increased the bliss. So that's some perspective on what's going on, or we're going to be hearing about in the Rasa dance. But there's an interesting angle on Krishna attracting the living entity by his flute that's presented by Garuda Prabhu in his editing of Tamal Krishna Maharaj's book, A Living Krishna, A Living Theology of Krishna Bhakti. He talks about how the deity is, he's talking about a theological presentation of Krishna consciousness, which is the objective of Tamal Krishna Maharaj's book. But he talks about the ultimate theological focal point as being the deities. For those of us who are conditioned in this world, we haven't reached the spiritual world. But for us in this world, how the focal point of the theology is there in the deities. And how the deities are, the Krishna's playing his flute, and he's calling us, just as he called it to go, but he's calling us in his deity form. And the reason why Garuda Prabhu says he's calling us as opposed to the gopis is because the deities are looking out at us. They're positioned to look outward to us as opposed to looking at each other. Radha and Krishna look at each other. They're here looking at us. And in this way, they are calling us also from whatever position we're in our conditioned nature. They're calling us to have our attraction flow to them and not to this material world. And so I thought that was just an interesting meditation that he had on the deities and how we also are being called by the flute of Krishna. So those are some thoughts on perspectives of these two verses. Any questions or comments that anyone has? Yes? Yes. Microphone.
We often hear how a soul has to be perfected in order to enter Raja Leela. But here we hear that some of the sadhana siddha gopis, they weren't yet quite perfected when they entered. And they had the opportunity to associate with the nitya siddha gopis. So I was just wondering if you could comment on that, that they weren't fully perfected, but they were allowed to be there in Goloka.
Well, there are certainly by the practice of sadhana bhakti, one achieves perfection. And the one difference between sadhana siddha and nitya siddha is that the nitya siddhas haven't ever performed sadhana. Like the distinction is made here in the purport we read that there's no description of such and such gopis ever having performed sadhana, so therefore they're assumed to be nitya siddha. So, but there's other evidence of those that did perform sadhana, but they also became siddha, they also became perfect. So just because one has practiced sadhana doesn't mean that one can't achieve perfection. And once one achieves perfection, Prabhupada has told us that there's no longer a distinction between, well, you performed sadhana and you didn't perform sadhana. And so there's still some distinction. Once you become perfect, you become perfect. So that kind of distinction is not to be made. And so some of these gopis come from that siddha, that sadhana background. And they certainly have achieved perfection, a degree of perfection, by getting the association of the nitya siddha gopis and ultimately getting Krishna's association. Certainly they have achieved perfection in that, even if they're stopped here even if they're stopped, because it says they were stopped, but they remained home with eyes closed, meditating upon him in pure love. And then, as Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains, then they, you know, after being stopped later, they were able to go and have Krishna's association. So I don't think that we're talking about living entities who are not perfect. But this is a point about that I was trying to make in the class, that there's so much variety in Lord Krishna's pastimes that there's enough variety there to encompass the fact that these gopis had achieved a certain level of perfection, but more perfection can be there. There's always more perfection that can be there. It's not that it stops. There's more perfection that can be there. And so I wouldn't say that they hadn't achieved perfection just because they performed sadhana. Yes, Srivikram.
It's stated that this Srimad Bhagavatam is compared to the body of the Lord. And this tenth canto is a smiling face. So like when you look at the deities, you start to look from the toe, gradually upwards, upwards, slowly. Then we come to the face. See, so now we're in the tenth canto. I mean, it took us such a long time already. And of course, too, we have to approach it very cautiously.
Mm.
See? Yeah, because it's not ordinary. Just a comment.
Yes, thank you. Well, we got Mika.
You were citing the verse, the prayer, when will I be anxious to read the books of the six Goswamis?
Mm-hmm.
And then you stated that by our attendance regularly, daily, at the Srimad Bhagavatam class, we are developing that adhikar. Is it also, did you imply that by Srila Prabhupada's purports, where he draws commentary from the six Goswamis books also, that just this regular attendance at the Srimad Bhagavatam class is fulfilling that aspiration also? Or should we aspire to separately read those books in time?
Why wouldn't you not? I mean, if by attending the classes in the Bhagavatam, you're finding this, that it is actually the pramana. It's actually the valid knowledge which is giving me knowledge and redeveloping my relation to Krishna. Why would you stop just, you know, when the clock stops every morning? Why wouldn't you all day long, you know, study and absorb yourself in the Bhagavatam and the literatures of the Goswamis? There's no prohibition. At one point, Prabhupada was saying we should have 5 hours of class a day. You know, how many of us are anxious for 5 hours of class a day? I don't know. Yes, I'm going.
I
think you should use the mic.
If one wants to understand thoroughly who is Bhagavan, who is Bhakta, and what is Bhakti, one must read. He used the word must read Brihad Bhagavatam Mita. Anybody, when one will be interested to know details about the pastimes of the 10th canto, then one must read Dasami Tippani. Prabhupada put this in his purport.
Mm.
So that's what made me motivated to get into this, because I was talking to Radha Govinda Maharaj, some questions. He said, why don't you read? It's already in your language. You should read that. So that's how we got into it.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, but did Prabhupada say? He said, oh yeah, Prabhupada said that. That's how we found out. Then I looked at it in the book, Adi Leela 5 chapter, and Prabhupada did say. if we want to. You know. But just to what you said about Nitya Siddha Prabhu is very true. The Nitya Siddha never have to come to practice. But in Drona and Dhara, previous chapter, few chapters before, Prabhupada also said that Nanda and Yashoda, partial expansion, they come to practice, show us how to become parents. If they don't exhibit, then how will we ever know?
Well, that's a different thing.
Yeah,
showing is a different thing than,
right.
than quality.
They never have to come, that's true. But sometimes they come to show us how, so we can get it.
Drona and Dara, I've heard the description that they're Amsha.
Amsha of Nanda Yashoda.
So not actually Nanda and Yashoda coming and showing. But
no, they're Amsha.
Amsha.
But they march back to Nanda Yashoda. Mm. Thank you. Nice class.
Anything else? Grant Rashimad Bhagavatam.